I want to take something you said, and I'm going to want you to weigh in on it, because I struggle on when we talk about takeaway selling. A lot of people are in a lot of businesses, and certainly in yours, they are terrified of this concept, and in fact, they are at the opposite end of the spectrum, with the attitude that they must be immediately, constantly, easily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, accessible to every customer and every prospect. And if they're not, you know, they're going to lose business. And so,
and you're pointing to Craig Ford.
And so, you know, today they're wired in and they're beepered up and they're afraid to go to the bathroom without the cell phone activated.
Sounds like my folks too.
You know, all of that.
Yeah.
And I fight it in any number of fields. And I'm going to ask you to comment because I know the realtors believe this. What do you think about all this?
I can just tell you from this is Craig Fort, by the way. I can tell you that the most successful agents I know are not that accessible, and they qualify the people that they work with. Some cases turn them away, and they make themselves exclusive in that sense. It's more of a positioning tool than anything.
And I'll bet you, Craig, that they don't have a cellular phone surgically implanted in their skull that rings every time they get in the middle of something, that they use it for outgoing a whole lot more than incoming, and they don't let the phone run their life like most people think you have to do because you have that ability nowadays.
I think they all have the tools that everyone uses. The question is how they use them in order to get their life back.
Correct.
They use them to their convenience, not always to the convenience of their clients. I think responsiveness is important, especially if you know if you're doing a deal and something's falling through on the deal and you need to fix it. I think the big issue here is knowing what's important and what's unimportant in a transaction and how much of your time, where you want to focus your time based upon what's important.
And also, when you put prospects or customers, I think you'll agree, when you put them through a process of having to somehow qualify,
absolutely,
when you make them climb over a few hurdles to get to you, you get more respect from that customer than you would. I mean, the whole relationship is better.
You are absolutely correct, Dan. In fact, I teach agents that you don't even go in there, you don't even talk to anybody or spend any meaningful time until you've actually qualified them. And we have questionnaires that they can give to people on how to qualify, how they can talk to a mortgage lender. And first of all, make sure you're dealing with someone who even has the capacity to buy. But it's that process, that takeaway process, that exclusivity and putting them through that hurdle that I think makes the biggest difference. They start to value you more as opposed to, you know, the question is, or I think, was it Zig Ziglar says, are you a professional tour guide or are you a professional salesperson? And most agents are professional tour guides because they end up, they don't qualify their people, they don't use this takeaway selling concept, but once they learn it, it dramatically increases their business. It makes their life a hell of a lot easier, too.
It really comes down to pre-screening, doesn't it? Deal with a few people who want to do business with you and eliminate the rest so you have time to serve those who really want your services.
But people fear this, and it really is an irrational fear because 9 times out of 10, it works.
Afraid they're going to lose a nickel.
It makes their life better. It makes their business better.
Afraid they're going to lose a nickel.
You have more?
No, I would just say that, you know, right now what I notice a lot of people doing with the Internet and email being such a new interruptive mechanism that's been introduced into everybody's lives. You know, you go, you know, 5-10 years ago when this did not really exist, people weren't using it every day. The first thing when people woke up in the morning was not, you know, check their, well, maybe some people did, but most people did not immediately go and check their messages on their answer machine or, you know, call into the office as soon as they jump out of bed to see if anyone tried to contact them. But now with email, you know, most people that I know that are really consumed by it, and this is something that is, I'm speaking from firsthand experience, of being connected all the time. As soon as you wake up in the morning, you check your email. Last thing you do at night, you check your email. And people that are allowing themselves to be connected and they don't disconnect are just getting consumed by this massive amount of information. And information and data is available, but there's only so much of it that's important, and the majority of it isn't important. And so I would just, you know, my whole point is that, you know, with this new, anytime there's new technologies that come into people's lives, there takes a time period for people to learn and understand how to use them well to their advantage.
I would like to discuss an evil on the other side of that continuum that's just as bad, if not worse. and that is absolutely shutting yourself off from communications and not responding to your customers and ignoring them and making them believe like you don't even want to talk to them. So if we're not going to do that, we have to find somebody else who's going to do that, because that'll kill us. That'll kill us real bad. And I know for it's easy to shut yourself down and not communicate, but somebody has got to be in the system to make sure that that happens. And I mean, I don't know how many businesses I've called or had people call them, and they just don't bother to respond. I'm willing to spend big money.
I'll give you the best
one. Chase people down and give it to them.
I'll give you the best one. I called a big name catalog company 2 days ago to buy something. I swear to God, here's the message. We're getting so many calls from our current catalog mailing, we cannot take your call. Our website address is www.whatsis, and the phone disconnects. I'm on the phone, credit card in hand.
That's called low hanging.
Can you believe it?
It must have been Abercrombie.
Now, these dummies mail me, I'm not going to name them, but these dummies mail me a catalog at least twice a week. I mean, every other day there's a catalog in my mailbox from these fatheads. God knows what they're spending in a year printing and mailing these catalogs, and now I can't buy. I mean, I've never heard anything like it in my life. Go to our website. And I said, well, I'll be going. Yeah, well,
Yeah, well, what I was referring to is, you know, the individual person that allows themselves to be so consumed with minutiae that they don't focus on the important things. And what you just talked about is a very big important thing. Someone in this company is an idiot.
Of course.
And they need to be paying attention to that.
And someone is at the top.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Although sometimes, you know, with big businesses, and I don't know that we have that many people listening to a big, but here's... The few times that I work with really big companies as clients, which I try and avoid under most circumstances, it's really easy to trip the CEO up or a high-level executive up with stuff they don't even know is happening. I mean, they don't even check. Like, you know, like I tell people, you should call in at least once a week, you know, into your own office or into your own store or into one of your stores and not be you, be Joe Spadotz, and see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be ugly.
And I will tell you, most don't do it. You know, and most have no idea. The classic, I carried it around for seminars for years. It was, I forget which rent-a-car company it was. I think it was Budget. I don't remember. But I actually went and bought a camera to come back to the Budget office to take this picture because I wanted to use it in my seminars. Over on the wall is a huge, beautifully framed, with a 10 or 12 point pledge of honor from the CEO to the customer. You know, the 10 things that we believe in, our mission deal. And you know what? Number one is to provide you with a clean, customer friendly, convenient environment. You know, and then it goes on down from there. And this thing is hanging on a wall. It's tilted a little bit like this. Not far enough, though, that all the dust falls off of it. And it's over top of a water cooler, you know, the bottle water cooler deal. And there's no water in the water cooler. There's no cups in the cup dispenser. What is in the water cooler is a big spider web and two big spiders crawling around in there. And there it is. And I'm thinking, you know, now the CEO had meetings about this pledge. And hired writers and carefully crafted this, and then they made up however many offices they got. They made up 10 gazillion of these framed doohickeys, and they probably delivered them all by FedEx, and they made everybody put them up on the wall, and, you know, completely meaningless. And I assure you, the guy has no earthly idea that it's being ignored, you know.
Now that we've made this and got this off our chest...
Yeah,
We must confess that everyone at this table,
of course,
and every entrepreneur on the planet is guilty of the same thing.
Of course.
But hey, we brought it up, so we're less guilty.
Yes.
People do what you not expect, but what you
inspect. Oh, absolutely.
Whether you like it or not, you know.
Absolutely. And who's next? Who's it on? You are it is mandatory that you have a $1 million breakthrough. That is either referred to your business or that you teach. Who hasn't gone? You haven't gone.
let's see, I'm Reed, Reed Hoisington, and I think the biggest breakthrough is that to find what people are spending lots on now, and you can just find a cheaper, better way. They can have that because they are spending it now, just like a home loan. I mean, people are paying for a home, and so many don't have the, you know, best plan. So people, if you just tell them that, they may have a bad plan, or you scare them, or you think that they may have a stupid plan, they will check. So it's not trying to sell folks things they really don't want. It's what you have now that you're screwed, you know, that you're screwing up on now.
Well, you know, I talk about this a lot, that people think that, like you said, people who don't have a product yet or don't have, people think they have to invent some new miracle thing in order to make a fortune. There's plenty of opportunity to do what is already being bought, as you say. Lots of money is already being spent on it, and it's already being done by a gazillion people, but you find out how to do it just a little bit better or a little bit different. You know, the Domino's example is always as good as any. I mean, when Tom Monahan got in the pizza business, it's not like nobody could get a pizza. One of the thickest sections of the Yellow Pages was pizza. And in every market, the market was already saturated with pizza places. You know, so it's not that you need to do something new. You just need to do it a little different, a little better, and you don't need to invent. Who else hasn't weighed in?
It's painful.
Inventing is painful.
Hi, this is John Rubio. My million-dollar idea definitely has been fax broadcasting. Certainly a lot of other marketers here are using the same strategy. But the beauty of fax broadcasting is that it's not expensive, and you can test to a specific segment of the population, to a target area, a certain state first, see what kind of results you get, and then turn it around and broadcast, you know, to literally hundreds of thousands of more faxes, because if it hit good with a little segment, you tested it, it should roll out quite easily.
How come no one has said people have said fax broadcasting, no one has said email broadcasting?
That was on my list.
You want to go?
Sure. I'm sort of going to, this is Craig Fort. I was going to carry on what Joe had said about continuity and about the importance of getting the right message to you, that your existing customer base, your network, and is probably your best market to market to. One of the things that we've been doing that's been extremely effective has been setting up our website and using other mechanisms to capture the email address of our customers and prospects, and to do things such as one of the things that we do in our business is we've created a National Agent Profit Network, and it's just a name, but they can join this network and they get some email tips of the month, and they'll get a newsletter, they'll get notification when a new newsletter's on the website and things like that. And the purpose for it is just to encapsulate these people who know you or know of you, and to provide a mechanism by email that costs you zero to communicate with them. And so what we do is when we take in a new lead, usually from an ad or something, what we do is we capture them on a database, and then we have a sequence of mailings. But in addition to the mailings, we also send out an email as well. And what we found is that I don't have any specific numbers right now as to how effective it's been in converting leads, but we certainly have a great conversion rate. But I'll tell you where it's been really effective is when I do a coaching pitch, or when we do a new product rollout or something like that, I will mail that out, and then I'll send one or two bulk emails. I'll also put the sales letter on my website, and in the email, it'll be a personal email. So it's got their name in the title line, and it's got their name throughout the email. We do a merge. And what we do is we'll drive them to a website. We'll put a link in there, and it'll either help them to remind them to respond or read the letter that we just sent them, or it will drive them to the website where they can read the sales letter as well and apply on a secure server. So what this has done, just some numbers, is we did a recent mailing for a coaching program that I'm doing, and we took in, I think it was 36 or 38 additional applications online after sending out that email. So I think anybody, like Chauncey in your tax business or anybody in any business, could use this mechanism, this technology, to create it or deepen the relationship with their clients, make sale announcements, make all kinds of things. You can even segment your list based upon what they bought and do bulk emails to them, things like that. And one of the things that I found works the best when I'm doing a bulk email is if I position it such that they're getting an exclusive notice and a, you know, like a priority notice or something like that that nobody else is getting, they're getting it first. And so usually it's a much more welcome message. But it's worked really well for us.
By the way, you just said something, and he had said it too, and I meant to mention it. TJ talked about segmenting a list, and you talked about segmenting a list. Smart marketers are constantly, they've got their list divided somehow, A quality, B quality, C right. quality, D quality, having something to do with frequency of purchase activity or size of purchase, and you're constantly watching the behavior of the people within that database and moving them, either upgrading them or downgrading them, and communicating with them differently.
Lowering the barrier of qualifications.
Lowering the barrier of qualification in order to get the inactive active. For a number of years, for example, like I teach that everybody once a year ought to do some kind of a very low barrier offer to those who have not been active during that year to get them back active, because the people tend to move in the direction in which they're moving. And for years in our catalog business, we did to the ones who hadn't bought anything during the year, we did here, buy any one item, you only buy one, buy any one item half off. Buy a $500 item, buy a $50, buy a $10 book, we don't care. You have anything you want at half off. But 1 year, I even did a buck. You have anything in the catalog you want for a buck. And it was profitable to do it. Because once they did that, guess what? The vast majority of them now bought again in a short period of time at a reasonable price.
It's a lost leader. That's a real effective technique.
Yeah. Okay, I'll weigh in. Is there anybody else that hasn't gone? Have I missed somebody?
Well, I wanted to throw out one other thing that's worked well for me and a lot of others. This is Michael Kimball.
State your name.
And that is doing joint ventures in direct mail, other than your own list of customers, the next best list of customers that you can mail, or the next best list that you can mail to, is someone else's customers with their endorsement, where they endorse your product or service to their customers.
Do you have that, Doc? Do you have that factual real hat yesterday handy for the dentist who's given the insurance agent's endorsement letter for the dentist? Do you have it?
Yeah, keep talking. Let him get it.
But anyway, that's worked very well for me, where I will approach other marketers who I know have, or I think have, customer base similar to mine. And I will propose a joint venture with them where they mail my sales letter promoting my product or products to their list of customers with their cover letter or endorsement letter on top of my letter. And, you know, in most cases, I the pitch that I make to them is I will pay for the cost of the mailing. Well, it'll be a test mailing of 2,000 pieces. I will manage the project. I will do all fulfillment.
Turnkey.
I'll do everything. All orders can come from me. We'll code the order forms, or if you want, we can have orders go through you so you'll know exactly how many orders we're getting, however you want to do it. But that's worked really well.
That's a true joint venture, and everybody ought to explore those. There's also the pure endorsed mailing, where the endorser is not being compensated, but is doing it because they're a champion. And it's not a perfect example, but it's a good example of that. And I was going to read it, so we have it on the mic. This is for a dentist from his insurance agent, right?
Absolutely.
And it's to the insurance agent's client base. Dear, plug in the name. This letter may seem a little strange to you coming from your insurance agent, so I appreciate your time and willingness to see it through. I know that if you're like most people, you probably don't give much thought to your teeth unless it's time to visit the dentist or you have a dental problem. Being in the business world and working with people day in and day out, I've come to realize that your teeth and smile have a lot to say about you. Having a nice smile helps build self-esteem and the new confidence that goes along with that. This is why I'm writing to you today to introduce you to my dentist and good friend, Dr. Barry Hammond. Just as I insure your assets, Dr. Hammond and his staff help to ensure a lifetime of beautiful smiles and healthy teeth. I know from personal experience that their goal is to listen to what's important to you and help you to develop a plan to achieve excellent dental health and keep your teeth for a lifetime. It is not my intention to interfere in any way if you have a current dentist with whom you are satisfied, and I'm sure that Dr. Hammond feels exactly the same way. However, if you don't have a happy dental home, that's a good term, if you don't have a happy dental home, have any dental problems, and would like to find out about your options, would like to improve your smile, or would just like to find out about the latest advancements in dentistry, I'm certain that you would be pleased with the highest quality of care and exceptional customer service provided by Dr. Hammond and his wonderful staff. Dr. Hammond and I have been in the same business center since it was built. This month marks his 10-year anniversary of providing exceptional dentistry to the community. To celebrate, their office has extended a wonderful offer to you, an initial consultation, screening x-rays, preventive cleaning, and fluoride treatment for only $125 per person when accompanied by this, that should be letter, not flyer, right. Regularly at $220 value. This is a limited-time get-acquainted special, so call them today in the phone number or stop by their office to take advantage of this great offer and meet their friendly staff. When you do, be sure to tell them that Kevin says hi. I hope to talk to you soon, and it's signed by the insurance.
Now, read the last part.
Well, that's his own plug. P.S. Yeah. If you'd like to review your coverage or know someone who needs new insurance coverage, please have them call and ask for them.
So there's a good reason to write these.
Yeah, oh, it's perfect. Yeah. It's just perfect. And everybody's got champions who will do that for them if they will just go ask.
If they'll just write it for them.
Yeah, well, again, it's the same with the joint venture. Everything's got to be turnkey, done for them. You can't really ask them to work.
And there was a good point that you should put a coupon in there as well that was made.
You can and you can't. I mean, that's pretty effective.
Okay.
I mean, so I think that's a pretty good piece.
Okay, great. Yeah, when all the work is done for them, you know, like I say in my letter, it's free money for you joint venture partner. They're not doing anything. You're just mailing them checks for them allowing you to use their list.
Make it easy for folks to say yes.
Yeah, and in this case, this guy's going to be, it's going to be the jogging the memory about, oh, I need to get this insurance, whatever. So, win-win.
Are you two having fun?
Yes.
Good. Is there anything, you want to put on tape?
I haven't had this fun since I was in third grade.
Yeah.
To follow up with what Mike was saying with endorsements, I made it hundreds of thousands of dollars just doing endorsements in 97 through promotions of seminars through other people that had a relationship with people that I didn't. And so if you're looking for the best place to get a cash flow surge, the first place to start is your own mailing list. And if you don't have a mailing list or you're already doing that, the second place to go is someone that has the ability to endorse whatever it is that you sell to people that they have a relationship with. And to not do endorsement relationships is crazy.
Okay. I'll throw in mine. I have two, one of which doesn't apply to most people, so I'm not going to talk about it. My name is Dan Kennedy. Does that make you happy?
Thank you.
is that your full name?
Yeah. Why? You want serial number and blood type or something here?
No.
I think the biggest thing for me, and maybe the most important thing that I hammer people over the head about, is getting into a position where you never spend any manual labor time talking to or meeting with people who are not predisposed to do business with you and give you money. You never get on the phone with them. You never meet with them personally. And, you know, when you talk about 35% of your business, Bill, and the store is coming by appointment selling in a retail environment, I mean, that's exactly what you've done there. Because you tremendously improved the productivity of those salespeople's time and improved their attitudes about what they do.
And their income.
And their income by having them not spend time with looky-loos who wander in and out. They're spending their time with somebody who came there to buy, and to buy at that place and to buy at that time. The better I got at that, the better my life got. And I mean, I so very rarely violate it now. And I think, you know, that like TJ said, those of us who kind of got where we got by hustling for a living, we're always tempted to violate it. prospect, in my case, you see on the phone log, a really good prospect, you know, and I mean, you're 10 there, somebody maybe I'd like to go do a speaking gig for. In your tendency is, boy, let's jump on the phone right now, or yeah, give me that call.
It's called being a cheap date.
Yeah, that's right. It's called being a cheap date. I mean, your temptation is to get on there and sell them, and it's exactly the wrong thing to do. And so
it's also
that's
the hardest thing to teach telemarketers. Oh, sorry, I didn't mention that word.
So that's been my big. Anybody, any last thing before we do a lunch break?
What I would just want more of a clarification on the explanation of a predisposition for the listener, someone that's predisposed to do business with them. For instance, someone in the carpet cleaning business would be like, well, I got to talk to my clients. They call in on the phone. And, of course, I teach them that, well, if they go through if they read a consumer awareness guide first or they listen to a 24-hour recorded message, they're more predisposed to do business. So what I would like from you is your definition of what's the difference between sales versus marketing. Because good marketing ideally makes most selling unnecessary until you get to the point to where they're so pre-sold, then you can talk to them.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, really good marketing, it doesn't make selling unnecessary, but what it does do is
it makes face-to-face selling, hardcore cold call selling unnecessary.
Yeah, really yeah. And what it does is it takes the uphill battle out. It takes all the resistance out of selling. So, you know, the corporate terminology is like consultative selling. I mean, it allows you really to be partnered with the prospect in structuring the best solution for their problem, not overcoming 56 million objectives and resistance. You know, in the advertising business, I mean, when I started in traditional advertising, the norm in the advertising business is to do, and in most consulting businesses, Jim, as you know, is to do pitch meetings. Because you go in, and everybody sits there like you are, Craig, with your arms folded. All right, now convince me. And, you know, I just refuse to participate in that environment. And with good marketing, it's not necessary. All that should have been diffused before you ever got there. And, you know, one of the things you brought up with the carpet cleaners, I just recently went through this with a friend of mine who's in the mortgage business, Lee, is the fear that if we don't immediately get on the phone with them again and deal with that immediately, you know, we're going to look, gee, if we take the time to send the report out and then we wait for them to read the report, we're going to lose this business. 9 out of 10 times, it is not true. And I just proved it with this guy. It was his greatest fear of switching to this kind of marketing. Is, you know, they're shopping for rates, and I got to get on the phone and give them a rate. Nope. You make them go to the recorded message. You make them leave. You get that package in their hands, and then you wait till they call you back again. And, I mean, he's like this. You know, I got leads on my desk. I should be calling. No, wait. And now they're not rate shopping them. They're predisposed to do business with him, only with him. They bought him as an expert. They bought him as an advisor. They want him. Margin goes up. Sales resistance goes down. And so, like my rule personally, I mean, I absolutely will not. We got two right now. But in most cases, most people in my business would have been out on a break making the call today because they're... We've got an event coming up at such and such a date in such and such a city, and we're trying to decide what speakers, you know, that we want to use, and we want to talk to Dan. But that person now has to be sent the appropriate information package, and I am not going to call.
And you know you've lost some business by doing that.
Yeah, but if you got enough deal for
right,
it.
Right.
Okay, but because I just do not want to overcome the resistance at all. I just won't do it. And even with paid consulting gigs, like my deal now is, I killed one a month ago, is everybody in the room already in tune with what kind of marketing we do? If they listen to the tapes, there's going to be two people from our company there who don't believe in this stuff at all. I ain't coming. You convince them. I'm not in the convincing business. That's not what I do.
But Dan, Joe's question was, what's the difference between marketing and sales? Then could have been said that marketing is finding and educating the customer, and sales is getting the money?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, marketing is all the preparatory stuff so that you don't have to Your selling is not selling against resistance.
Finding, educated, and pre-screening the customer.
Yep, and pre-selling the customer, really. Well, so that the customer is accepted. And I don't care whether we're talking about carpet cleaning, mortgage broking, brokering, or whatever, so that the customer is predisposed to do business with you and only with you. They're not gathering information from you and four other places, and then they're going to compare. They're not price shopping you. They're not. All of those questions are gone. Now they want you and only you if they can get you.
Yeah, I mean, see, what I tell to people all the time is that, you know, sales is what you do when you got someone on the phone or in front of you. Marketing is what you do to get somebody on the phone or in front of you, preferably as predisposed as humanly possible, completely positioned to do business with you and only you. And that's what, you know, the term selling in advance, which I originally got from your book, The Ultimate Sales Letter, is that's what good marketing does. It sells people in advance. So the time where you actually do have them on the phone or face-to-face, the chances of them doing business with you is much more likely.
You know, the one of the keys here is, early on, is clarifying your USP, if you will, but absolutely knowing 100% who you're going after so that they can identify, hey, that's for me.
Sir, what is your name and what is a USP?
It's a very good point. And what is your name and what is your USP?
My name is Bob Willis, and I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, no, you're right. If they identify, I mean, you're right. Part of it is a message to market match, or, you know, whatever terminology you want to use. But part of it is, if they identify specialist versus generalist, I mean, all of that, if they identify that you're for them, then a lot of the competitive issues don't exist. They're gone. And it's when people perceive you as an interchangeable commodity that all of the competitive issues are there, and it's very hard to make them go away. So it's from one extreme, you know, to the other. And if you want to summarize all that, I mean, I think the single most important word in terms of making money in business, marketing and non-marketing, is clarity. You know, are you, like you said, are you clear about who your customer is and who your customer shouldn't be? Are you clear about your message to the customer? Are you clear about your objectives? Are you, clarity is magic.
Well, would you clear up what USP is while you're at it?
Sure. What's your name? USP is, it's a unique selling proposition. I've now started to talk in terms of magnetic selling proposition. But the issue, the question that I invented to teach it was, why should I do business with you versus any and every other option available to me in your category? And so it really is an answer to that question, is why should I sell my house to you for cash versus listing it with an agent versus trying to sell it myself versus putting it on the internet versus all of the calling my brother-in-law versus all of the other things I might do, including the other 56 people advertised in the New Times this week that say, I buy houses for cash. Why should I do business with you, only with you? You know, like in the Yellow Pages, the question extends to, why should I call you first? Because first typically gets, you know, that's what a unique selling proposition is.
Thank you very much. Our listeners appreciate it.
And ideally, it's concise. Can't always be, doesn't have to be. And, you know, sometimes you can't get to it. And then you get as close as you can. You start to work on a unique sales story. You know, if you can't get it down to one or two sentences, sloganism is sometimes not mandated, but you still have to have that position.
And your example is the Monahan example, fresh hot pizza delivered in 30 minutes or it's free.
It's still one of the best that
it's
I know.
Changed the pizza business forever.
Revolutionized the industry.
Absolutely, overnight.
That we got this, one of the USPs for our tax business, taken straight from that Domino's pizza thing. It's biggest and fastest tax refunds allowed by the IRS guarantee. And it's not.
That's very good.
That is good.
It's not saying anything different than what my competition can do. Also, I'm just saying it. I'm giving a unique selling proposition and putting it as my headline, and they don't even talk about it, and we get the calls, and they don't.
Well, that is a great headline, but that's also a great point. You know, often, it's not that you do anything unique, but it's that nobody's saying and explaining that they do it, and by saying that you do, you're on track.
Schlitz beer.
Yeah, Schlitz beer. I used to tell, there's a chain, it's a favorite story of mine, it's a pet story. There was a chain of instant print shops, pre-Kinko's, in the Detroit area, that for 6 months ran a campaign that worked marvelously for them. And the headline on the ads was, "We use real ink." And then the copy went on to talk about how we use real ink, which gives you your darkest solids and your brightest reds. And, well, I got news for you. Everybody uses the same damn ink. There's one ink, and there ain't no other ink, and that's it, you know. But, I mean, nobody said it. And by saying it, staked out the position.
It's amazing how few people do that. Even in commodity businesses, the first guy that comes out to say that gets the advantage.
Exactly.
You know, some people struggle putting them together, too, because, you know, well, I do this, and people should realize they can have more than one USP.
Sure.
You know, if you've segmented your market, you can have one for each part of it.
Absolutely. Anybody else before lunch? Last little anything?
That last tidbit was from
once,
Jim
Clark. Once, twice, thrice. Great. Keywords, relatively concise responses, best ideas, best strategies. Press stories. Direct mail. Who's first? You're up or you're avoiding?
I'll do it.
Okay.
Ron Ipack. Direct mail, definitely only do it to a tightly matched market. I learned a while ago that just trying to send it out to everybody was a waste of time. The tighter I can match the message to that market, the more effective it's going to be.
Example?
Example is, I tell my transmission clients that if they want to target people via direct mail, they need to find the types of vehicles that are more apt to have problems. For instance, you know, 1992 to 1996 Dodge Caravan owners. They can get a list of them, mail the message directly to them, and get them in the shop.
Target
very, very, very tightly.
Or Pinto owners of any age.
That's right.
Hey, Dan, is there anybody doing, in niche markets, either doing lead generation through direct mail successfully, cost-effectively?
Not by comparison to other mechanisms.
Yeah,
but if you want to crank it up all the way, you put it in the mix, because you can do it at better than break-even.
Okay.
Your cost of sale will wind up better than break even, but if you compare it to other mechanisms, no.
Okay.
It depends on whether you want to trade margin for speed and volume or not, which is a decision people have to make with a business. Because the faster you want to grow and the bigger you want to grow, typically you trade off margin in order to buy the growth.
Right.
Dan, maybe the exception in my business is that we have high margins and a high ticket. So I can afford to mail a whole bunch of these guys.
You can do lead generation. When you're selling a $36,000 widget, you can do lead generation by direct mail until you're blue in the face. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's still, by the way, the cost of sale, what I said will be true.
Sure.
The cost of sale will still be higher than by other mechanisms. But, you know, if it's $100 more to make a sale, you could care less.
I can contact more bods faster.
Yeah, got it. What? Nothing. He's kicking
me under the table.
I've got some good advice.
We'll move you to your own corner of the room if you do not behave.
He's jealous because of my supreme intelligence.
Bill Glazer, getting back to direct mail, the one thing that I see when I critique other people's pieces, that the thing that they make the biggest mistake on, this is now retailers I'm talking about, is either the absence of a deadline or the absence of a bold deadline. And a lot of times they put a deadline in, but they hide it in, you know, the four-point invisible type deal. And deadlines is what is everything. If you don't have a good deadline, people just don't respond, because if they stick it, you know, they might see the offer and they say, gee, this is a good idea, I'll get to it. And unless they get to it pretty soon, they're not getting to it.
You're really talking about a sense of urgency.
Right. So my recommendation is to have use the deadline big. Oftentimes I stick it right in my headline.
All that.
And also is not to make it too long. I find that shorter deadlines really outperform. A lot of retailers, they're thinking, you know, this guy's busy, I got to give him like 3 months to respond.
Yes.
You know? I give him max 10 days, and I find 3-4 days usually works best.
You mean 10 days after you think they're going to get the letter?
Right.
Yeah, this timing.
Which takes 10 days.
Well, yeah, this timing thing is tough, and you're absolutely right. You know, getting this thing right
is important, and the uninitiated will tend to make them too long, not too short. They'll tend to err on the side of giving them too much time, not giving them enough time. But in many businesses, not the retail business, but it begs the issue of different types of delivery mechanisms where you have greater control over when it's hitting, and sometimes that's money well spent purely because you can give yourself much greater control over the expiration dates. A couple things about that. You're right to emphasize it, and you're right in some cases it becomes part of the headline, it becomes part of the main body of the offer, it gets repeated several times during the offer. If you're doing packages where there's a lot of reading and or a significant decision, maybe not whether somebody's going to buy a new suit or not, but somebody's going to spend $500 or $1,000 or $2,000, one of the things that I've always found that helps is you make sure that there's a full weekend in there between the time that you think it's going to hit and your expire date. There's always a surge of activity the Monday following the weekend. There are a bunch of us who really will set it aside in the read it over the weekend pile and then read it over the weekend. And so you don't want to cheat somebody out of that opportunity by having your expire date and your delivery date fall at the wrong times. The other thing, this links to takeaway selling, and the more effectively you've done that, you know, the deadline only works if they believe it. You know, if they believe you're serious and you're not going to let them in after that point, or you're not going to let them have this thing, and so it has to do with the strength of your relationship, the credibility of your relationship, and what you say about it.
Well, the thing about events, they believe it.
Yeah, because
it's coming and going.
I mean, we're doing like we're doing right now. You know, the tiered open door deal where we're going to let certain people register first, and then if there's any seats left, the next group will be allowed to register.
I read that.
The next group will be allowed to register, and they buy it because I'm getting notes on the faxes. You know, don't forget to put me in pile A because I'm a this, that, and the other thing, and I did this and I did that.
Mm-hmm. Platinum Club, when you rose, you know, for months and months, there's one spot left. I mean,
you were a pain in the ass.
No, I weren't, man. I mean, I have never worked so hard to spend
spot.
Well, no, to, if it was a private day plus that.
Yeah.
So it was like, what do I have to do, you know? It took, what, 3 months, 4 months, just to talk to them. Maybe one more than.
Yeah.
Hey Dan, I've noticed that you tested like a kind of a takeaway offer as in a headline with one of your direct mail pieces. It was like no more than X number of people will be privy. I tested that in a couple of mail pieces and it pulled incredibly well, especially in my back end. I mean, like many times what I've gotten with those mailings.
Yeah, the trick's picking the right number. Techniques are very good technique. Only 100%. Well, you just used it for the coaching promotion. Only X number of my members will be permitted to. Only X number of my customers. Yeah, and the word only is a good word to start the headline with.
Right.
And it works extremely well. It's only 116 of my customers will have an opportunity to get X or some variation thereof. The trick is picking the right number, meaning a number that's not so small that it discourages everybody. And it's already too late. Not so big that it doesn't drive the urgency. Not so small that you sell less than you could have sold.
You have to justify that number or it's not going to be believable.
Oh, you're absolutely right. In fact, I mean, in general, you have to justify everything. You know, anytime you do any limitation, whether it's a time limitation or a numerical supply limitation, you've got to have a reason. Sometimes it doesn't take much, but there has to be a reason. But, yeah, it's a great tactic. It's unfortunate when you find out you could have sold more than
step down in
the room. Yeah, I mean, like last year at the Speaking Business Bootcamp. I mean, we used it for the Speaking Business Bootcamp, too.
You know,
we turned away 26 people with money in hand, which, as you might imagine,
took a couple of months.
I used it with a coaching program, and I did get a real high response. And what happened was I just formed another group. I said the response was so high that we ended up forming another group. So you won't miss out by being part of the small select group. But because, you know,
unfortunately, in the case of the seminar, I didn't have enough to do a second seminar.
Right, you can't do that.
But you're absolutely right to identify. Yeah, it's a great tactic. Okay, anybody else on direct mail?
Yeah, this is Michael Kimball. I found that when I mail to rent it list, to code list, where the people on the list do not know who I am, I found that the APAL look works best. And most of the sales letters that I mail are 12, 16 pages with inserts.
Could you explain the APAL look?
Looks like a personal piece of mail. So I like to mail in a 9x12 envelope with a laser addressed shipping label, you know, like a 3-inch by 4-inch shipping label, laser addressed. And in most cases, I won't have in the return address just street address, city, state, zip only, no name, no company name, and live stamps.
On a 9x12 envelope?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, shipping label right smack in the middle.
And you use gray or brown. Right?
Yeah, and I like, and then when I mail to my list of customers, I like to do the same look, but just change the color of the envelope or the size of the envelope.
See, if that's individually addressed to me and I don't know who it's from, I don't dare throw it out without opening it because I don't know what's in it. So I open them. I mean, that'll get me, and it would get most of us, and it'll get most of everybody else. Because if for nothing, no other reason, they got to be sure it's not something they asked for, wanted, or is being sent to them that they need.
I just have a hard time picturing a 9x12 envelope making it being personal.
Well, it's got a, I buy these shipping labels from Quill or from Uline, and they're pre-printed, they'll say to, from. And they'll be red, white, and blue or whatever, and it's laser addressed. It looks like someone printed this shipping label on their computer, live stamps.
The point is the customer has no clue what it is, so they have to open it.
Right. Yeah,
and it looks like it was done onesie-twosie, not mass-produced. Yeah, that's why you use that kind of shipping label.
I changed the type.
It looks like something American Desk Drawer.